Welcome to episode 75 of Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. This podcast is listener supported. Our patrons donate monthly to support the production and development of the podcast. If you would like to support us, visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. And don't forget to listen to the end of this episode for our traditional patron shout-out. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is the other co-host of the podcast, Maciek Makulski. Hi, Maciek.
Hi, Adam. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode. Each week, we bring you a discussion on topics related to our region, and this episode looks at the upcoming NATO summit. As a reminder, Talk Eastern Europe is a member of the Europod network, a network of European podcasts covering a range of social and political issues.
Thanks, Maciek. Well, we have a lot to cover today, so let's get started.
So hello again. As we mentioned before, our topic for this episode is upcoming NATO summit. Adam, you did an interview, but before I ask you about introducing our guest speaker, I would like to ask you also about giving us a bit of context of this episode, because a NATO summit is around the corner, but when exactly, and maybe you have some impressions, what are the expectations before this summit? And of course, as we know, this is also important summit because of some developments recently between Russia and United States, also United States and Germany regarding the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And last but not least, this is also a first summit in which Joe Biden will participate as the US president. So maybe he is interested in, you know, having a strong message that he is an effective global leader. What do you think?
Well, we will see how that plays out. But yes, indeed, the NATO summit is scheduled for June 14th. So that's Monday. This episode should be up a few days before that. So please do, hopefully, you listen to it before the summit. But actually, the topics that we are covering, that are covered in the discussion, I think are much, much broader, and they don't just touch on this on the summit itself, but more on the state of the transatlantic relationship and the current threats, internal, external, that the alliance faces today. But really, as you mentioned, Maciek, I think it's very important to note that really this summit is about having the U.S. back at the head of the table with Joe Biden as president, who has expressed a strong transatlantic path for his foreign policy. So there's probably going to be no real surprises at the summit. It's only one day, so it's not a very long summit. It's going to be discussing pretty much, renewing or showing that the transatlantic relationship is strong, that there are many issues that need to be discussed. And as you mentioned, particularly from our standpoint, from this region, the situation with Russia and the threats that are on the eastern flank, I think we can add Belarus. I'm not sure to what extent those discussions and those topics will be addressed, but I think they will be brought up for sure, following the kidnapping or the forcing down of the Ryanair plane back at the end of May. So there's a lot of topics that could be covered. I'm not sure how many will be covered. I think it's important to note that, however, the Ukrainian delegation, the president of Ukraine, will not be attending this year's summit, which is something new. Normally, they get an invitation as kind of partner states to show the NATO solidarity with Ukraine. But this time, for reasons not fully certain, that Zelensky, President Zelensky, will not be at the summit. And we also have to remember that this is part of Joe Biden's broader trip to Europe. So he's at the G7 summit first, and then the NATO summit. And later next week will be the summit with Putin in Geneva, which I think will also be very important to watch and see what happens there.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple of important developments, important from the perspective of Europe, but I'm sure you are also covering how this, trip of Biden to Europe and the NATO summit itself is covered in the US and what, especially before the summit, what media in the United States or expert community in the United States talking about in regard to this NATO summit? Do you see some differences in terms of, on what parts is the biggest impact is put?
Yeah, I think generally the U.S. media is presenting it as a broader Biden trip to Europe. So there is, because it's part of other summits that are taking place, I think there's also a summit between the U.S. and the EU as well. Mm-hmm. So there's not much specifically focused on just NATO. And I think more of the attention is on the G7. And more of the attention will, of course, be on Biden's Geneva summit with Putin. And so this is NATO is just one of the many kind of points.
Okay.
So I think what's interesting is how it's, of course, it's presented that this is, as you mentioned at the beginning, a way to show that the U.S. president is back in a leadership role of transatlantic relations, probably most important for the domestic audience as well as for the European audience.
Also quite interesting because the last NATO meeting was also of this kind, that without any huge, achievements, let's call it like that. And I remember we were even cautious not to call it summit because we couldn't call it summit because it wasn't summit. And now we have summit finally, which is also, as you said, one of the points of the US president's agenda and not the most important one. Yeah.
And I think, though, it will be there will be some discussions about the future of the alliance. I think that will be an important point that we should look at. And this is something that we discuss a little bit, actually quite a bit, in the interview for today's podcast.
Okay, so now I think it's a perfect time to say a few words about our guest speaker, and then let's move to the interview.
Sure. I invited Alice Stollmeyer, who is the founder and executive director of an organization called Defend Democracy. They're an independent initiative, a transatlantic initiative aimed at defending democracy from internal, external, and technological threats. They do a lot of focus on disinformation, and how they affect the state of democracy in the transatlantic relationship. So I invited Alice also because the work that she does is very important from the security standpoint, but at the same time, she's not maybe the most, like, let's say, military involved person. So it's a different perspective on the NATO alliance, more looking from transatlantic perspective. And I think it's a very unique and an interesting perspective that we get from her in this interview. So joining us now is Alice Stollmeyer, who is the founder and executive director of Defend Democracy, an independent, nonpartisan transatlantic initiative aimed at defending democracy from internal, external, and technological threats. Alice, thank you so much for joining us here on Talk Eastern Europe.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. And the main context of the interview, as you know, and as our listeners will find out, is to discuss the upcoming NATO summit on June 14th, as it is a key summit since it is the first time President Biden will be attending as U.S. president. In your opinion and from your perspective, what do you think we can expect from the summit? What are the main issues that will be on the agenda as you see it? And maybe what are some issues that should be but may or may not be addressed during this initial, let's say, first summit that has Joe Biden's participation?
Yeah, well, maybe before I answer your question, it's perhaps good to know that I used to be more of a European Union watcher than a NATO watcher. Mm.
Okay.
Bottom line, the EU is a peace project while the NATO is a military alliance, and I myself am more of a peace person. But for me, from around 2014, the line between peace and war became increasingly thin. Think of Crimea, Ukraine, the shooting down of flight MH17. Perhaps good to know that I'm Dutch. So these were my compatriots. And of course, at the time, being a digital strategist, 2014 was really also the year when I saw the first increasingly vicious bots and trolls coming up. So I think due to threats like terrorism, Russia, China, the two projects, so the EU and NATO, have started to merge and increase cooperation. And the pandemic has only made the urgency of the need for them to cooperate more clear. And now even Germany is urging for stronger ties between the EU and NATO. So that as an kind of an introduction. No, I'm certainly not a NATO expert, but I've become an increasingly keen observer. Now, for the upcoming summit, I'm really quite excited about it. After the past few with Biden's predecessor, I think this is hopefully a more optimistic and constructive summit. And basically, it's a summit to future-proof the alliance, to renew the transatlantic bond, and to demonstrate the commitment to transatlantic solidarity. I think what is so the context of this summit is important, I think. This is really, you know, it's not just the new American administration, but also the context of geopolitical competition, the pandemic. It's really, you know, all the different threats that we've been seeing for a while have kind of increased and accelerated over the past 18 months. And well, this is the first time that NATO leaders are getting back together to address them. And also important to realize that it's, you know, no country can address these challenges alone. And the world has become increasingly unpredictable and competitive. So we really, it's for me, this is really a time to get back to basics, to our founding values, to resilience, and to defense and deterrence. And of course, getting ready for the future, because, you know, even I mean, that's another aspect that's really accelerating, and that's the technological development. And we'll probably get into that a bit later. But that's hugely important, not just challenge, it's also an opportunity. But it's definitely should be part of the picture, and I think it is. So my concrete expectations of the summit is that the leaders will adopt the 8 proposals for the agenda. So that's the 8 core proposals. Well, you've probably seen them, but it's about deepening political consultation, strengthening deterrence and defense, enhancing resilience, sharpen the technological edge, supporting the rules-based international order, boost partner training, combat climate change, because that's also a big part of the future picture. The next strategic concepts, and then, of course, the always returning topic of investment in the alliance. Yeah, so perhaps just a few more words about the context.
Sure.
It's also important to realize that this context is, that this summit is kind of sandwiched in between the G7 summit and an EU-United States summit. And, you know, they're all taking place in the same week. And interestingly, and from my viewpoint, very significant, because my organization is about democracy. So interestingly, all three summits have one thing in common, which is precisely defending and strengthening one of our key founding values, which is democracy. So all that kind of to sketch the to draw the what I think about how I view the summit. I think you also mentioned what is not on the agenda. I think actually we might come back to that later on.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's stick it. let's that's my answer here.
I think it was really interesting that you made this tie that the NATO summit is taking place at the same time in the same week as the EU-US summit, the G7, as you mentioned, which is happening first. And then, of course, we also which I maybe will ask about later is also the Putin-Biden summit.
Yes.
As well. So there's kind of a ton of issues. And I think you're right that we do need to look at it in a way that these are all connected. Yeah, these are not separate incidents or separate summits and discussions. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe what just real briefly my question about this, because you talked about the getting back to the basics and renewing the transatlantic bond, which we saw over the last 4 years or so have been, there has been some tension and some issues there, clearly. How would you look at the current state of the transatlantic relationship from today's standpoint? And what are some of the weakest points? And you mentioned that NATO will also needs to get back to its core values. A lot of those values have been kind of disregarded in some ways and by some of the members over the last several years.
Yep.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about how you see that these core values and how NATO can address it and what it means for this transatlantic relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's a lot of questions in one.
True.
So a few things. I think, yeah, definitely on the one hand, of course, there is a big change with the new American administration. It's, you know, regardless even of the political party, you know, for me, our core founding values, be it of NATO, be it of the EU, you know, those are or are supposed to be nonpartisan. Democracy is a near universal value, so it shouldn't be a partisan issue. And even if just for that reason, I very much welcome the new American administration. I think many leaders and policymakers and even the people in general in Europe are quite happy and hopeful for what this means because of course what happens in the United States also affects us. But you know, it's not like we're now expecting that everything will be perfect from now on, that there won't be any challenges anymore. We may also have become a little bit cautious, because what happened once can happen again. You know, there is no guarantee that after these 4 years there will again be a Biden administration, or you know, there's a lot of things happening in the United States at the moment, and they also have to do exactly with these fundamental values. And I think that's something that I hope will be acknowledged during the summit, or even, you know, or even if it's only in private conversations, that's fine. You know, it's easy, too easy to look only at threats coming from abroad. I think, as I said earlier on, the line between war and peace has become thinner, but so has the line between foreign and domestic. You know, there's, as you said, there are some member states that have not been very protective of these founding values. In fact, I looked up the latest report of the VDEM Institute, which is an independent academic research institute, which brings out a report on democracy every year. And it's compiled by a lot of different scientists. And, well, you know, sadly, there are a few NATO members in the top 10 of most declining democracies. Some of them are not even democracies anymore. No, they've become a so-called electoral autocracy. And, well, to name a few in the top 10 of those declining democracies are Poland, Hungary, and Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already seen that this generates some problems. We've seen that in the EU when they are on foreign policy, be it statements or actions. We've seen now several times that Hungary is either trying to water down statements or actions or even vetoing. We've seen the same thing recently within NATO when Turkey has, I think it was about a statement or action, perhaps sanctions. I can't remember the exact details, but it was to do with Belarus. So, you know, renewing a commitment to our founding values is, you know, should be more than words. It should really be about member states also really committing to act on those words.
And do you think NATO is a format where they can actually address these, for example, during a summit discussions, or how can NATO address this internal problem, I guess is my question.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I guess a summit is, you know, it's a very short summit. It's only one day. So it will be hard to find moments to have one-on-one chats. And I think, you know, some of these topics are, well, politically sensitive.
So,
it's not something to probably come up with in like a public statement or a joint communique, but more something for one-on-one conversations. I actually, you know, there's one thing, and I frankly should have looked it up before, and we had this conversation. I'm not entirely sure if NATO has, you know, but the EU has a so-called Article 7 procedure, which is when it's a procedure for when a member state does no longer respect the criteria to become or be a member state. There are two Article 7 procedures, one against Hungary and one against Poland, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wonder if NATO has like a similar procedure. I'm not sure. I mean, what do you do with a member state who, you know, and I'm specifically thinking of Turkey. What is there like a legal procedure? Is there, or does it need to be, What can they do besides having one-on-one conversations and trying peer pressure and I don't know?
Yeah, it is a big question and a big challenge. I think you're right. I don't think there is any sort of specific procedure internal that NATO can do, especially when we think about Turkey, as you mentioned, because Turkey cooperates quite closely with some of the countries which are considered to be rivals to NATO or competitors to NATO. Such as Russia.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, but same goes for Hungary.
True. That's true. And China, we can also consider China in that the conversation as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe this is a good point because I thought it was very significant. And, you know, we already mentioned Turkey and Hungary, but Poland, even though they are, you know, they are very pro-NATO and pro-security, but as I mentioned, Poland is also in the top 10 of declining democracies. And so they are, for the moment, still a democracy. But it's really important to realize, and I would like to quote the White House National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan here, who says that democracy is a national security issue. Because if we don't show that democracy works at home, we are not going to be as successful in making that case to, for example, China or Russia or anyone else. And he says there really is a national security dimension to democracy today, just as there was through the decades of the Cold War. And I thought that was a very pertinent observation to make in this in our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also goes back to what you said earlier about how what happens, the developments in the U.S. also have a role, have influence on what happens in Europe and
in
EU.
Yeah.
So I think when we saw like this, maybe there's hope that many people who are following the issues of transatlantic relations and the situation with the West, that the trend in the U.S. may start a trend to help reverse the decline of democracy in other parts of the transatlantic alliance. Yeah. We will see.
Yeah. But also within the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I alluded to this before, but you know, many people who are not following U.S. developments very closely are still feeling relieved that, you know, democracy survived. But you should be aware that this is a struggle that is still continuing. To this day, there are still people in the United States, not least the former president, who are contesting the outcome of the November 2020 elections. And there, you know, currently there are partisan efforts at, making it more difficult for people to vote.
Right.
And there's plenty of things going on. So we've not seen the end of this in the United States.
That's true. I think it will be interesting to see whether or not any of this will be addressed during the summit, either during the NATO summit or the EU-US summit.
Yeah.
Or the G7 summit as
right.
well. These are big issues
yes.
that I think, as you mentioned, are also a little bit sensitive and may be avoided. But I hope that there is some opportunities to point out these weak points and
yeah.
try to develop, you know, some ways. And even if you said, like you said, behind closed doors or in the side conversations,
yeah.
try to reverse these trends, which are going
in the
wrong
direction. I think this is exactly what friends and allies are for, to hold up a mirror to each other and to, you know, to have like constructive criticism and to have like open and frank exchanges on these on these challenges.
I want to, we talked a lot about internal challenges, and I think
yeah.
it's really important, which we covered. And I think, and connected to this, I would like to maybe go a little bit looking at the external challenges
yeah.
that the alliance faces and the transatlantic community faces, the EU faces, and Russia is obviously one of them. And you mentioned already back in 2014, the rise of the digital threats, trolls and online disinformation campaigns,
mm-hmm.
which actually tried to identify these weaknesses and exploit them and, you know, make them even larger
yeah.
in the Western countries. So maybe I could ask just a little bit about your organization and the work that you do focused on these also external threats, looking at disinformation campaigns, cyber attacks. If you could advise, let's say, if you could advise leaders during the summit or side conversations about these external threats, what would be the most important areas that you would think that they should focus on from the transatlantic perspective?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Yes, of course, the foreign threats are as important as the domestic threats, and we should certainly not forget about those. You know,
mm-hmm.
Russia has only increased its aggressive behavior. China may have been more subtle in the past, but you know, over the past 18 months, also has become more blunt, let's say. So what my organization does is we try to look at, you know, instead of just focusing on disinformation or on cybersecurity, or on, let's say, a more human rights approach to democracy. What we really try to do is to bring them together. Mm. And so the foreign, the domestic, and the technological threats, because I think they cannot be addressed from one angle only. We really need to try to, you know, precisely because the problem is so complex, silo thinking is certainly not the good way to try to address these. More specifically on disinformation and online manipulation, you know, disinformation campaigns and is not just about spreading incorrect information. It's also about blowing up just a tiny part of reality, blowing it up out of proportion, or taking it out of context. And it's also something that's not just happening around elections, but it's really ongoing, like every single day. So we really shouldn't, and I think probably NATO is more aware of this as an organization than individual member states. So we really should have structures and responses in place 365 days per year, and not just special projects around elections. That said, we just did such a special project around the Dutch elections. And our approach is to, you know, I acknowledge the importance of fact-checking and trying to educate people and increase digital literacy and so on and so on. When you look at an election or other big, for example, geopolitical events, for example, let's say a pandemic, it is, in my view, important not just to do very much in-depth research, academic, into, you know, trying to better understand what happened and so on, which is, again, you know, very important to fine-tune your policies and responses for the future. But, of course, when you publish those reports after the event, it's already too late to kind of mitigate the effect during the event. So what we did for the Dutch elections is to really try to do things more in real time. So we monitoring, analyzing, and exposing of online manipulation and disinformation campaigns. And I think this was very successful. We got really good feedback from journalists, from media. There was quite a lot of articles and interviews, also from the government and from people who were happy to have like a contact point for raising strange things they had seen online. And it's of course a challenge to do this in real time, but I think we managed to do it. And this basically has the advantage of doing two things at once. On the one hand, it diminishes the potential harmful effect on an election or an event. And on the other hand, by showing what is happening online and the tricks that are being used, you are also increasing digital literacy of your readers and of voters,
which is key, as well as building, I guess, resilience. By doing these type of activities.
Yes.
Really interesting results. And I imagine also some of the data that's collected during this can even afterwards be used by researchers to help with strategies. Yeah. Okay, as we're nearing the end of our conversation, so maybe we can come back to the NATO summit once more and just touch on one of the points that you mentioned in the beginning was one of the aims of this summit is to kind of future-proof the alliance. Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about this NATO 2030 initiative, which was launched, I think, last year, aimed to look at the future of the alliance. And I'm just curious what maybe What are some of the outcomes that could be of this initiative, and how do you see the shape of the future of NATO, considering these internal and external threats that we've been talking about today? Mm-hmm.
Well, as you can imagine, I was very pleased to read this new strategic concept, or at least the draft, the so-called 2030 agenda. Mm-hmm. As it aims to reassert its core identity as an alliance rooted in the principles of democracy in order to deal with the challenges of today and tomorrow, which are Russia's aggressive actions, the threat of terrorism, cyber attacks, emerging and disruptive technologies, the security impact of climate change, and the rise of China. Now, it's also interesting. There's a little bit of a national interest here, because I found out that a few months ago. But a few months ago, my compatriot David van Wiel, or David van Wiel, you might say in English, has become the Assistant Secretary General for Emerging Security Challenges. And so the emerging and disruptive technologies are his portfolio and his responsibility. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I think technology is increasingly a part of not just the opportunities, but also the challenges for NATO. And that's not just the more, you know, what grabs public attention, like disinformation and cyber attacks. But also, you know, it will affect, of course, even conventional warfare. Like, you know, what happens if, for example, you know, I'm definitely not a military expert. let's make that clear. But think of a tank. If tanks, I suppose they are like personal cars, increasingly come with all kinds of technological board computers and whatnot. So if, you know, instead of firing at a tank with a rocket, if you can take it out of order by a cyber attack, that's quite, you know, that would completely change, I guess, the way of even conventional warfare. Mm-hmm. And but that you know, that's just one aspect of it. I think what is important here is that NATO is in a geopolitical competition with especially China as an emerging world power. And mm-hmm. of course, China is quite advanced in technologies like artificial intelligence. So it's really important and that NATO stays ahead, not just because this is a military advantage, but also because we don't want technologies we don't want authoritarian countries to set the norms for technologies that we will use. So, for example, for us, for the NATO alliance, and also for the G7 and the EU and the US, it is very important that technologies are values-based, so that they respect our digital rights. And I think one of the challenges will be, and I'm encouraged by when recently I listened to David van Wiel in a roundtable on precisely this issue. One of the challenges will be for NATO will be to kind of align the security aspects of technology with the digital rights aspects of technology. And they are not necessarily a problem for each other. On the contrary, I think that if you know, values-based technology will be trusted more easier by its users. And for innovation, it's actually an advantage to have a more open and democratic process than a very top-down driven, let's say, development. Mm-hmm. You know, it won't be easy, because, as I said, you know, this is like a huge challenge, and the developments in this area are going really, really fast. But I have good hopes for the Transatlantic Alliance, and not just NATO, but also the G7 and the EU and US. Actually, the EU and US will next week launch a technology and trade council where this will be one of the topics too. So I have good hopes that we will move in the right direction and that we will be able to bring these, both the values and the security aspects of technology together.
Thank you very much, Alice. That's a very interesting last comments. I think and important to look at how technology is going to be such an important aspect in the not just security but also in the Transatlantic Alliance as well. And looking at I just think about the vaccines, the vaccine development, and how that went. We had, you know, very untransparent development of vaccine in China and somewhat in Russia versus the more the Western ones, which were more transparent in terms of the science. And we saw that there was, I don't know if you would call this value-based, but there was a lot more trust in the Western vaccines than there has been in the Russian and China ones. So I think technology, we can kind of make this parallel that the technology is probably very similar, but even more so important as when we have authoritarian control over technology, they clearly have their own power interests in there as well, where our values are much more on transparency and openness and as you said, digital rights. I think you opened up a whole new area of topics, which maybe we could follow up on a future podcast episode. But I think we've hit our time for today. So Alice, I just want to thank you again for joining us here and encourage our listeners to check out the defenddemocracy.eu, which is your organization. You're doing a lot of great work fighting against the threats that we face in democracy.
Thanks.
And that was Adam's interview with Alice Stollmeyer about the upcoming NATO summit. We hope you found this interview interesting. I think, Adam, it was really interesting discussion. And as you mentioned before the interview, you managed to cover a lot of issues. And I now agree with you that the work Alice Stollmeyer and her organizations are doing is very important. Maybe do you have any, you know, takeaways as you did the interview, the most important you would like to highlight? Because I also wanted to ask you or to present or to say that this interview is a part of a bigger project, so maybe you would like also to say a few words about that.
Sure. I think I just would just summarize the discussion with a few words about the importance of looking to the future. There are a lot of threats, of course, facing today, but I think what Alice really pointed out in terms of the development of technology and how the transatlantic community needs to work together and to focus on addressing the quick and the speed of development of technology is very important in competition with rivals like China. And I think that's a really important note that we finished off. And as we mentioned at the end of the interview, she opened up a whole new list of or new area of topics, which I think we can cover in a future episode of the podcast. And finalizing it all, I as you mentioned, Maciek, I think it's important to mention that this podcast is part of a wider project. It's a small project, but it is a wider project of New Eastern Europe, which is called All Quiet on the Eastern Flank. It's a small project which is co-financed by NATO Public Diplomacy and the texts, which include articles in the next upcoming issue of New Eastern Europe, which will be available very, very soon. Hopefully within the next week or so, depending on when you are listening to this episode. And then we will have one more online panel discussion, which will take place after the NATO summit, which we will then summarize some of the most important points from the perspective of the authors who were in that special edition of New Eastern Europe. So we have several authors who will join us and who will kind of give us their feedback from the results of the NATO summit. So this is kind of the first part. Okay. This is the pre-NATO summit discussions. We will have a series of texts both in the magazine as well as online. And then the last final summarizing panel.
And I assume that the listeners of Talk Eastern Europe will be also able to listen to this special panel after the summit in form of a podcast, right?
Absolutely. We will, as we have traditionally done in the past, we will produce the audio from the online event, and we will publish it on the Talk Eastern Europe channel as well. So you'll have an opportunity, if you missed it live or if you don't want to watch it on YouTube, there will be an opportunity to listen to it as well.
So those who are interested in security affairs and especially in this upcoming NATO summit, stay tuned for that. But yep. You will also find all information about all those resources that Adam mentioned in our next episodes and also on our Facebook group.
Yes, yes. Please do watch the Facebook group. There will be a lot of announcements coming very, very shortly.
Okay, and I think it is smoothly transition now to our last part of this episode. As we already mentioned, we do have a Facebook group, so those who are not members of this group, we invite you all. This is the place where you can find all important information about our podcasts, upcoming episodes, current episodes, our ideas. And also you are always invited to arrange a discussion about the topic, about the region, which is important for us, and we can follow up about that.
Yeah, and we always get really good feedback on most episodes, at least from several listeners. So it's, yeah, please use that forum to share your feedback with us. We love to hear from you.
So Adam, now the most important part.
That's right. The traditional, which we say in the beginning, and hopefully you're still with us because this is our traditional patron shout out, as we call it. Each episode, we do want to also thank our patrons who donate to keep this podcast running, and without whom we would not be able to do the kind of work that we are doing. So I just want to quickly say hello to all of our patrons, including PM, Eleanor, Olaf, Ian, Lorenzo, Marina, CB, Pat, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Naomi, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Scapegoast, Wilhelm, David, EAC, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you so much for your support. As always, we really do appreciate it, and we're really, really pleased to have you here with us.
So we have a wonderful group of 31 patrons, as far as I remember. Thank you.
32. 32. Oh,
32, magic. Okay.
Yes. Even better.
Even better. So thank you very much for your support. And I, as always, we want to underline that this project is possible. Thanks to your support. And we can develop because we have such a wonderful group of supporters. So thank you very much for that.
Okay, Maciek, I think that's all we have for today. So for all of you who are listening, thank you for joining us on this episode of Talk Eastern Europe. We have a lot more coming up in the coming weeks. Summer is coming, but we still have plenty of plans. So stick with us, and we will be back very, very soon.
Bye-bye.